So one of the things that has changed in my life since I've finished the heavy-duty studies is I watch way too much TV. Especially on cold winter nights. Simon and I were watching one of his favorite television sitcoms last week. It's a pretty entertaining show. It has lots of great one-liners in it. But as is the case with some sitcoms, there's often also a serious thread kind of underlining the plot of the whole thing. Well, last week's episode was actually shaped around this idea of questioning an understanding we seem to have arrived at in our society of late, the understanding where many truly believe that feelings, how something makes you or I feel, is truly the best measure of whether something is right or good. There was this one point in the show where one of the characters who was extremely frustrated with all of this, he had to give a speech, and he was really frustrated with what he was allowed to say and not allowed to say. He kind of rhetorically says, since when did feelings become the most important thing in the world? It's kind of funny, but it also pointed to something very serious, I think. Now, I need to be clear before I go any further. I'm not advocating that we should all go around living as though our actions don't matter and have no impact on others, or don't care about what the impact is on others. Of course, we need to be thinking about others, especially over and above ourselves. That's the basic posture of a Christian. And we're always to be considerate and thoughtful. However, here's the big but. To say that our feelings, or the feelings of others, should really be the final measure of a choice, a thought, a word, a deed, I believe that's a very dangerous direction for a society to move in. Because feelings, while they're important, they're really an inadequate measure for a lot of reasons. Feelings, first of all, are always subjective. Your feelings and my feelings about something very rarely will be the same. So how do we pick who's right? Feelings are, at times, irrational. They can also be very, very manipulative, especially when they're being driven by this inherent selfishness that, if we're going to be honest, we all struggle with. And our feelings are almost always motivated by helping us to avoid pain or discomfort. That's their MO. And therein, actually, I believe, lies the biggest problem with us using feelings as our primary guide. But I'm going to set that soapbox aside for a few minutes, and I'll get back to it. So if feelings are an untrustworthy guide for us, then what is right? What is a better guide for us? Well, here at the beginning of Matthew's Gospel, we actually meet someone whose life shows us a better way. This fourth Sunday of Advent, we are spending some time with Joseph, Jesus' earthly dad. Joseph is very interesting, particularly because he has this really kind of central role in the biblical story. And yet, if you start looking for texts on Joseph, you'll realize there's not very many of them. We know very little about him. Joseph actually only makes 5 very brief appearances in all of the Gospels. And the story we have before us today is actually the most detailed. It's the one that tells us the most about him. It's our introduction to him. And we get to meet him in what was a pivotal moment in his life. I'm sure he looked back on that moment and said, that was the point that everything changed. So here he is. We don't really know how old Joseph was, but we know he was engaged to a young girl named Mary. We don't know how well they knew each other. It's likely that it probably wasn't very well at all. They probably hadn't gotten a chance to spend a lot of time together. Sometimes in that time and place, marriages were actually arranged completely by families. It is possible that Joseph and Mary had actually never met. We don't think that's the case, but it's possible. And engagement, which in that time and place was called betrothal, involved a much higher level of commitment than it does today. To be betrothed, even if it was to someone you barely knew, was to be already committed to that person for life. And so to end a betrothal was a much bigger deal than breaking off an engagement is today. It was more like divorce. It was breaking this lifelong legal relationship, the potential for that. And it involved far more than simply the two young people who would have been calling off the marriage. It also involved the potential loss of material resources, which might have been part of the betrothal agreement. And of course, it involved potential shame for the people involved and for their families. So it wasn't something that you did easily or lightly or without significant repercussion. And it would only ever have been done for really serious grounds, things like infidelity and unfaithfulness. So we have Joseph here. He's betrothed to Mary. He's bound in this very strict agreement, and he's seemingly doing his best to honor his part of it. He was probably working really hard to prepare the home that he and Mary would share in Nazareth. If you were at the Christmas pageant last week, you might have seen their version, which suggested that he had a bit of a money-making scheme going on, building carts. Not sure that's biblical, but interesting. So here he is, dedicated to preparing for their life together, and he gets this devastating news. Somehow, despite the fact that she is supposed to be a virgin, and she is betrothed to him, bound in that tight agreement, somehow, Mary's pregnant. Now, how Joseph hears this news, we're not told. I don't think it would be stretching it to say it might have been in exactly the same way as he would have found out were this all happening today, probably from someone else, likely a well-meaning friend, who just thinks Joseph has the right to know. You know, people haven't changed that much since the first century. Whether it comes through the village grapevine or through social media, gossip is gossip. And we love to sink our teeth into it. So poor Joseph. That news must have been devastating for him. Pregnant. I think the word must have landed on him like a pile of bricks. In that one word, all of the dreams he had dared to dream for he and Mary and for the family they hoped they would have together, they were crushed with that one word. Can you imagine what he must have been feeling? Hurt, betrayed, confused, and of course, maybe more than anything else, frightened. Because remember, it wasn't just Mary's honor that was at stake in all of this. It was Joseph's too. You didn't have to leap very far to arrive at the conclusion that this was likely his baby. And they just hadn't been able to control themselves and wait until the wedding night. See, if Joseph wasn't careful, he could quickly end up as guilty as Mary seemed to be in all of this. And that could have all kinds of consequences for him. Consequences in his relationships within his own family and within his faithful Jewish community, his version of his church family. They would have all born some of this. So back to my statement about the danger of using our feelings as the best guide for our actions. I think it's really safe to say Joseph would have had no shortage of feelings swirling around at this point. And we have this sense that all of them were probably pushing him to the same conclusion, that the marriage was off and the betrothal needed to be broken. And Joseph, he just needed to figure out how he was going to do that. Well, to preserve his own reputation and chances for another suitable match once the dust on this one settled, Joseph would need to make sure that everyone knew that this baby was not his. His own fear and his sense of betrayal would have likely been had him leading in that direction. But we also realize, or can tell that he realized all too clearly, that taking that path would be devastating for Mary. She would be publicly shamed, and her future would be ruined. Worst case scenario, according to the laws, she could actually have been stoned to death for her apparent infidelity. And Joseph is well aware of that. And that realization seems to override his own gut reaction to try to clear his own name in this scandal. Because for some reason, even before the angel comes to him, Joseph realizes that his feelings, in following his feelings in this situation, using his feelings as his guide, will not be the best course of action. And so, revealing a truly compassionate heart and a not insignificant level of selflessness, he decides to, as our text puts so tactfully, dismiss her quietly. He's trying to save her life and to minimize the inevitable shame. Joseph tries, as best as he thinks he can in the circumstances, to put Mary's well-being above his own. Even before the angel showed up, Joseph had figured out that reacting according to his feelings was not the way he was going to handle this. And thank goodness he did. Because we all know, looking back from this side of 2,000 years later, that there was a lot at stake in all of this, wasn't there? So, what was it in Joseph that led him to set aside his own feelings as best he could? What was guiding him as he tried to figure out what to do with this mess? Well, as I said before, throughout the Gospels, we are told very little about Joseph. There's actually only 4 stories when he's named, and in the 5th, he's just referred to as one of Jesus' parents. In each of those stories, we're not really told much about Joseph. We're just told what he did in a given situation. So we don't actually get to discover very much about who he was as a person. The only hint that we get about who Joseph was comes through one funny little detail in our passage this morning. It's in verse 19. We read that Mary's husband Joseph, being a righteous man and unwilling to expose her to public disgrace, planned to dismiss her quietly. That part about him being a righteous man, it's been quite intentionally added by Matthew as he was writing this gospel. When you read the whole text, it actually kind of sticks out because it interrupts the flow of the narrative. And that's always a really good clue that we should stop and pay close attention, because those bits that don't fit are always significant. Why did Matthew feel the need to explicitly say at that point that Joseph was a righteous man? I think it's because knowing that now helps us understand everything we would find out about Joseph later. It explains everything he would do throughout his whole life. To be righteous is to be a person whose way of living is trying to be conformed to the will of God. It's to try to live as God leads and to embody all that God calls us to embody. It's what we as a congregation have been talking about throughout the fall, trying to embody these virtues that we get to see in Jesus. It's about being a person of character, godly character. So when Matthew tells us that Joseph was a righteous man, he wants to make sure that we clearly understand that Joseph was a man of godly character to the point that it was exemplary. Now, some of you have probably heard this. It's one of my favorite descriptions of character. It is said that character is what you do when no one's looking. Character is what you're really made of. It's the qualities within you that guide how you live day in and day out. People of character are people of integrity. They're those people who are solid, you know, you can count on them to be the same regardless of the circumstances. People of character have feelings, for sure, but they're not guided by them. It's the virtues that have grown within their characters that determine the choices they make. It was the virtues that had grown within Joseph's character that overrode all of those emotions he was feeling, the emotions of fear and pain, and gave him the strength to do what he needed to do to protect Mary and her unborn baby from very real and imminent danger that they were in. Now, we don't know how Jesus was able to grow into this godly character, but we can sure see the fruit of it through this story. In his initial instinct not to submit Mary to shame and disgrace, not to try to have her be overwhelmed by the judgment of her community, we get to see Joseph's deep compassion and his selflessness. We also get the first glimpse of what would turn out to be incredible courage. Courage that Joseph was going to need as time went by to be able to play out the rest of what was his role in Jesus' life. If you read the other stories of Joseph, his role was always about protecting Mary and Jesus. And that always took incredible courage. He was protecting them from, you know, things like a king. And we get to see faithfulness. Joseph was determined to remain faithful to Mary and to honor the commitment he had made to her, even though the circumstances of her pregnancy were clearly beyond his or anyone's ability to comprehend. This was going to be hard. No question. Their marriage was starting with this huge challenge in the middle of it. And yet he stuck with her, exactly as the angel encouraged him to do in that dream. All of these things were part of who Joseph was. They were sewn into him. They were part of his character. And so they were what guided him as he determined what the right course of action was. So, Joseph is guided not by his feelings, but by his character. And something really cool happens when you do that. In doing that, his character was actually formed even more. These same virtues that we get these glimpses of in today's text, they were strengthened even further as he lived through all of those challenges that would come. And I think that dynamic actually reveals the biggest problem, the problem I alluded to at the beginning of the sermon, with letting our feelings guide our actions. The reality is that a very important part of our character growth comes when we face life's trials standing up. And yet, if we follow our feelings, most of us will run in the other direction, because that's what our feelings are usually telling us to do. Avoid the pain, avoid the struggle and the discomfort. But if we do that, we miss out on the potential growth that can come through them. It's not easy, but it is the way it works. So compassion and courage, faithfulness, selflessness, they all seem to be part of Joseph's character, right here from our first introduction to him. And certainly, by his embracing all of the challenges that would come for he and his young family, those traits would increase over time. As would one other virtue, one that I think perhaps explains why Joseph would be willing to accept God's call to him in the first place, to honor his commitment to Mary and to this child she was carrying. Perhaps above all others, as a man of godly character, Joseph trusted in God's leading and God's purposes. When that angel came and spoke to him, Joseph realized that all of this, everything that was happening to him, was strangely part of God's plan. His betrothal to Mary, her unexplained and very much unplanned by him pregnancy, and all that would come after for them, and particularly for this child they would name Jesus. All of it would be instrumental in God's plan. And realizing that, that was enough for Joseph. He trusted that God's purposes were being worked out through this strange path that seemed to now lay before him. And he let that trust be his ultimate guide. So as you can see, even in this first introduction to Joseph, it was his character that was really instrumental in his accepting God's call to be Jesus' dad. Friends, our characters are just as important as we each find our own places in God's story. Growing in character, as we've been talking about this fall, and letting that character guide our choices, that's essential as we try to follow God in our own lives. And you know, just as Joseph dared to believe for himself, you each have a vital part to play in God's story that is still unfolding. Like Joseph, you're probably not going to realize fully the significance of your life. It'll probably seem pretty ordinary to you. But regardless of how it seems from your perspective now, I truly believe that something my husband Simon often says is true, that you may never know the impact you can have on another person's life. But the impact is there. So as we wind down this time of waiting through Advent, and we prepare ourselves for Jesus coming and even more for his return, let's consider Joseph for a moment and how his character had been shaped by God so that it was exactly what Joseph would need to live out God's call to him. He had grown. He'd grown in compassion and that necessary courage and faithfulness and selflessness, and he'd really grown in his ability to trust God. And all of those things made him who he was, and they made him perfectly suited for what God had for him to do. It's the same for you and I. God has been and is continuing to shape each of our characters so that they are exactly what we need to answer the call God has for each of us. Now, some of you might be sitting here thinking, I'm not special like Joseph was. I mean, it's Joseph. You know, I think before the angel showed up in that dream, Joseph probably would have said exactly the same thing. You never know when your call from God's going to come. He was special. You are special. God has a call for every one of us. And rest assured, to live it out, all you need to do is let God shape your character and then let that be your guide. Amen.